This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's John Dalby Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see johncast.net.
Kia ora and welcome to the April night sky from Carter Observatory. The comets that graced our skies during March have now moved into the northern sky, and we hope they are putting on a great display. Jupiter may be spotted low in the west after sunset. On the 14th and 15th of April, the crescent moon will appear close to Jupiter. On the evening of the 26th of April, New Zealand and Australia will be treated to an occultation of the second magnitude star, Alpha Librae. For NZ, the occultation starts at 10:35 for Auckland, 10:41 for Wellington, and 10:43 for Christchurch, and all will end by midnight. For Australia, the starting times range from 7:21 for Alice Springs to 8:29 for Hobart. This will be a challenging event, as the moon will be only 15 hours past full, and will make spotting the star against the moon's glare difficult. Observing through a telescope with high magnification will give you the best chance of observing this event. Saturn can be seen rising opposite in the east and will be visible throughout the night sky. Saturn reaches opposition on the 28th of April. The sixth planet from the Sun, Saturn, like Jupiter, is a gas giant but slightly smaller in size and about one-third the mass. Small telescopes reveal the rings and its largest moon, Titan. Like Earth, Saturn has a polar tilt and seasons, and one result of this is that the angle we view the rings at will change. The rings are tilting over, allowing us to see more of their structure, and due to their reflectivity, the overall brightness of the viewed planet increases. When seen edge on, the overall brightness of the planet will decrease. Orion and Gemini can be found in the northwest after sunset. Canis Major and Minor, Orion's two hunting dogs, can be found following Orion across the sky. In the south we find the large and small Magellanic clouds, appearing as two luminous patches near Achernar. Both are easily seen with the unaided eye from the location of a dark sky. They are two small galaxies, each made of billions of stars. The large cloud contains many clusters of young luminous stars seen as patches of light in binoculars and telescopes. The LMC is about 163,000 light-years away and the SMC 200,000 light-years away. In the large cloud there is a glowing cloud of dust and gas called the Tarantula Nebula. Like the Orion and Carina Nebulae, this gas glows due to the ultraviolet light from a cluster of very hot young stars at the center of the nebula. The cloud is about 800 light-years across. It is easily seen in binoculars and can be seen by eye on moonless nights. This nebula is one of the brightest known. If this cloud was at the same distance as the Orion Nebula is from the Earth, it would appear as bright as the full moon. These nebulae are regions where vast clouds of dust and gas are forming into clusters of stars and planets. Another hazy patch can be found near the small cloud, and it is called 47 Tucanae. It is a naked-eye globular cluster of millions of stars, only 15,000 light-years away, and has no connection to the small cloud. Globular clusters are mostly made of very old stars, 10 billion years or more, at least twice the age of the Sun. A telescope is needed to see a decreasing number of stars fading away from the edge of the cluster. Another globular cluster called Omega Centauri can be found left of the pointers. It is much larger than 47 Tucanae, with a mass of about 1.5 million suns. It is about 17,000 light-years away. There is mounting evidence that this is the core of a small galaxy that has lots of outlying stars to the Milky Way. Alpha Centauri is the brighter and lower of the two pointer stars. It is the closest naked eye star, 4.3 light-years away. Alpha Centauri is a binary star because it has two stars that are the same brightness and size as our own star, the Sun, orbiting around each other in a period of 80 years. The discovery of an Earth-sized planet around the fate of the two stars was announced in November of 2012. A very faint and slightly closer star, Proxima Centauri, orbits a quarter of a light year from the brighter pair. Beside Crux, the Southern Cross, is the Coalsack Nebula, which is a cloud of dust and gas dimming the more distant stars in the Milky Way. Many similar dark nebulae can be seen along the Milky Way. These clouds of dust and gas eventually collapse, forming clusters of stars. Near to the second brightest star in Crux is the Jewel Box. This cluster of young luminous stars is about 6,400 light-years away, and the cluster formed about 10 million years ago. To the unaided eye, it looks like a faint, fuzzy star. Binoculars will reveal individual members of this cluster. Along with Crux, there are two other crosses in our southern sky. The Diamond Cross sits near to Crux and includes the Theta Carinae cluster, sitting at one point of the cross. It appears as a single bright star surrounded by a number of fainter stars. It is also called the Five of Diamonds or the Southern Pleiades due to their resemblance to the Pleiades when viewed through a telescope. This cluster is about 500 light years away and is also about 10 million years old. Higher up and almost overhead is the False Cross. This group of four equally bright stars sits to one side of the Milky Way. and the region between the diamond and false crosses are a number of clusters in nebulae that can be easily seen with the eye and in binoculars or telescopes. Mercury is in the morning sky during April and will appear as a bright magnitude zero star. On the 20th and the 21st, Mercury will sit near to Uranus, and in this conjunction should be visible in binoculars. Venus and Mars are sitting close to the Sun and are invisible to us. Venus will return to our evening sky in May. We wish all of our listeners clear skies.
Thanks for that, John. Now here's Ian Morrison with what you can see in the northern night sky.
The night sky, April 2013. Well, after sunset, that lovely region of the sky with Orion, Taurus and Gemini and Auriga above is setting towards the west. But you can actually still see Jupiter for a short while in the first part of the month, and I'll come back to that later on. Moving over towards the south from Gemini, one crosses a fairly blank part of the sky. It's a constellation of Cancer the Crab. There's a very nice cluster, an open cluster, a wide open cluster called M44, or the Beehive Cluster, at its heart. And down to the lower left is another cluster called M67, both working looking out for with binoculars. But then, more obviously, one comes to that rather lovely constellation of Leo the Lion, looking like the lions on their haunches in Trafalgar Square. The head and mane of the lion forms what's called the sickle, and at the bottom of that is the brightest star, Alpha Leonis, or Regulus. There are some very nice galaxies underneath the belly of the lion, and they can also be picked up with a reasonable pair of binoculars on a dark night or a small telescope. Coming over from Leo is another fairly blank part of the sky. It's the constellation of Virgo. But between the star Denebola, which is sort of the back end of Leo the Lion, and the star called Vindematrix, which is in Virgo, there's an area called the Realm of the Galaxies. Virgo and Coma Berenices are the two constellations. And here there are quite a large number of brightish galaxies which are part of the Messier catalogue. So it's a lovely region to look at with a medium-sized telescope. But you have to have a night sky which is really dark, not too much light pollution, and no moon in the sky. But then we come to a really quite bright star. It's the sort of orangey-yellow star called Arcturus in Bootes. And further over towards the east, a little arclet of stars called Corona Borealis, the Northern Crown. And then we come to Hercules. The four brightest stars of Hercules make up what's called the Keystone. They're slightly further apart, the top pair, than the bottom pair. If, with binoculars or a small telescope, you work up from the bottom right to the top right, about two-thirds of the way or so, you should see a little fuzzy ball. And that's a globular cluster called M13. It's the best, the brightest globular cluster that we can see in our northern sky. These are very old spherical distributions of stars, a million or more stars in some of them, and they date, we believe, from the origin of our Milky Way galaxy. Rising quite late in the night, but coming ever higher as April goes on, is in fact the bright star Vega in the constellation of Lyra the Lyre. Coming upwards from Leo, we come to Ursa Major and the bright stars forming the Plough. I'll come back to the Plough later on. And further over still towards the north, Ursa Minor with Polaris the Pole Star. And winding its way around is a very not particularly visible constellation called Draco the Dragon. Well, what about the planets this month? Well, Jupiter is in the constellation of Taurus the Bull, is still visible in the western sky after sunset, moving eastwards across the sky. At the beginning of April, it'll be shining at magnitude minus 2.1, that's quite bright, and it's just 5.5 degrees above the star Aldebaran, the Eye of the Bull. We're moving away from it, so as the month progresses, its angular diameter drops slightly, from 35.8 to 33.6 arc seconds. But a small telescope will still show plenty of detail on the surface, such as the equatorial bands. And of course, the rather lovely four Galilean moons as they weave their way around it. On the night sky page, of the Jodrell Bank website, I have given a list of the relatively few number of times in the early evening when the red spot will be roughly central in the disk and so visible. But as, sadly, Jupiter gets smaller in angular size, it'll become less obvious. So if Jupiter really is past its best, Saturn this month is coming to one of its best 2 months. It lies in Libra, the scales. It rises about half an hour after nightfall as April begins, and so will transit at an elevation of about 25 degrees at about 2 o'clock in the morning. It reaches opposition on the 28th of April, so will then be visible all night and due south around midnight universal time. And as it does so, of course, its magnitude brightens and its angular size increases. The good news, of course, is that the rings have now opened out. They're about 18 degrees from the line of sight, the best for about 6 years. Around opposition, the rings will extend to about 43 arc seconds across and 13 arc seconds in width. And we're now looking at this planet's southern hemisphere, while much of the northern hemisphere will be hidden by the rings. With a small scope, you should be able to spot Cassini's division, and that lies within the A and the B rings of the ring system. And if the night is particularly dark and clear, you might spot the inner ring, it's called the crate ring or the C ring, which is really rather faint. And of course, you should be able to see Saturn's largest moon, Titan, given a small telescope. One problem with Saturn is it's now in a southerly part of the ecliptic. It never rises that high in the sky, perhaps up to 28 degrees, and sadly that's going to get worse during the next few years. Mercury is basically going around behind the sun, so we're not really going to be able to see it. However, at the very beginning of April, it will in fact be fairly low on the horizon at dawn, but because the ecliptic, along which of course it lies, makes a very shallow angle to the horizon, its elevation will be very small. You'll probably need to use binoculars to pick it up. Obviously don't use binoculars after the sun has risen, but you might just spot it low on the horizon in the east. Mars passes behind the sun on April the 18th, and thus will not be visible for several months, till it appears, of course, in the pre-dawn sky. Venus, likewise, that reached superior conjunction on the far side of the sun on March the 28th, and so will not be visible for virtually the whole of the month. It might just be seen very low in the west-northwest, about 20 minutes after sunset, at the very end of April. But you'll need binoculars to spot it, even though its magnitude will be minus 3.9. And again, protect your eyes. Do not search for it until after the sun has set. Well, what about the highlights of the month? Well, as I've said, Saturn has the first of two good months to observe it, reaching opposition on the 28th of April. It will then lie 9 times further away than the Earth from the sun, and it shines at magnitude plus 0.3. The 18 arc second disk is surrounded by its lovely ring system, extending for about 43 arc seconds. To find it in the sky, well, you can start with the arc of the plough's handle and follow that downwards, first to the bright star I mentioned earlier called Arcturus in Bootes, and continue down to find the white first magnitude star Spica in Virgo. Saturn, which is a little brighter than Spica, lies just to its left in the constellation of Libra and will appear slightly yellow in colour. If you hold a pair of, say, 10 by 50 binoculars steady, you should pick up Saturn's brightest moon, Titan, at magnitude 8.2. And as I've said, a small telescope will show the rings, and if you have a telescope of 6 to 8 inches, coupled with a night of good seeing and a magnification of about times 200, you'll see Saturn and its ring system in their full glory. Saturn rotates quickly, with a day of just 10.5 hours. Its equator bulges slightly, so it appears a little squashed. Like Jupiter, it does show belts, but their colours are quite muted in comparison. Due to the orientation of Saturn's rotation axis of 27 degrees with respect to the plane of the solar system, the orientation of the rings as seen by us changes as it orbits the sun. And twice each orbit, they lie edge on to us, and so can hardly be seen. This last happened in the year 2009, and they are now, as I said, opening out. They'll continue to open out until about May 2017, and then narrow again until March 2025, when they'll be edge on. Well, we've had a comet in the sky. It's called Comet Pan-STARRS, named after the instrument that actually discovered it a couple of years ago. It's hard to say how visible that will be during April. I'm recording this not soon after mid-March. Now, I was able to spot the comet and take a photograph. That was on the 13th of March, the only clear night we've actually had in the last week or so. It wasn't terribly bright, and you had to have binoculars to pick it up against a relatively bright sky background. How it will be seen later in March and early April is hard to say. A good thing is that its elevation is actually rising, and once we get into April, it becomes a circumpolar object, so in principle visible all night. It moves into the constellation of Andromeda and then carries on northwards. And on the night sky page, I show a little chart showing you precisely where in the sky it will be. The best time to look for it, and it could be a wonderful imaging opportunity, is around the 1st to 6th of April, when it passes very close to M31, the Andromeda galaxy. I think on about the 4th, both would be encompassed in the field of view of a pair of binoculars. So I do hope it won't have got too faint by then and we can have a lovely view. I will try and update you on the night skies page as we come to the beginning of April and also as we move through it. So look in there for any updates. Jupiter. Though well past its best, Jupiter is still worth observing in the southwestern sky after sunset. It still lies in Taurus, moving eastwards, and is not far, as I said, from the star Aldebaran, the Eye of the Bull. Look out for the equatorial belts and the four Galilean satellites as they weave their way around. On April the 13th, a thin crescent moon will join Jupiter and the Hyades and the Pleiades clusters in Taurus. That should be a very nice evening view if the sky is clear. On April the 25th, the moon will be in partial eclipse. The shadow of the Earth will just clip the extreme northern edge, which means the top half of the moon should look a little bit darker than the lower half. Mid-eclipse is at 2100 hours, British summertime, which of course we'll be in by then. And interestingly, that night, the moon passes just 4.5 degrees below Saturn. So if you find the moon, look upwards a bit with a pair of binoculars, and there will be Saturn. And finally, we can sometimes see some of the brighter asteroids. An asteroid number 4, Vesta, also called a minor planet, shining at magnitude 8.4, should be visible close to the open cluster M35 in Gemini, low to the west-northwest. Again, I'll give a little chart to let you know where to look. So, we have a chance still of seeing the comet. Saturn is rising in ascendant, should be lovely to look at even though it's a low elevation, and I do hope you get some good observing during April.